Maria Wisława Szymborska was a poet from Poland, an essayist, a translator, and a recipient of the 1996 Nobel Peace Prize in Literature. Her poetry beholds an ironic precision that allows the historical and biological context to come to light in fragments of human reality. This morning I share a poem of hers called A Contribution to Statistics. Out of 100 people, those who always know better, 52. Doubting every step, nearly all the rest. Glad to lend a hand, if it doesn't take too long, as high as 49. Always be good because they can't be otherwise, 4. Maybe 5. Able to admire without envy, 18. Living in constant fear of someone or something, 77. Capable of happiness, 20-something, tops. Harmless, singly, savage in crowds, half at least. Cruel when forced by circumstances, better not to know even the ballpark figures. Wise after the fact, just a couple more than wise before it. Taking only things from life, 40. I wish I were wrong. Hunched in pain, no flashlight in the dark, 83. Sooner or later, worthy of compassion, 99. Mortal, 100 out of 100. Thus far, this figure still remains unchanged. We are counted and categorized with statistics. These numbers speak volumes about what we are, humankind, our fears, appreciation, desires, and the things we just don't like. There are many ways to know us. The what and the how, that is pretty easy. The objective statistics that many think are king. Show me the numbers and I'll tell you about a people. Marketing. This is objective knowledge. However, if we just looked at the statistics without the story, without the why, we'd only have a piece of the puzzle. Many do not care about the story, as it can be hard to quantify. It can clutter the frame of the picture that one is trying to capture, losing important content and clarity. In my opinion, this is why the world's scriptures have been so successful in staying the course of time. Because for each individual who endeavors within these wisdom teachings, a different answer to their life's questions is held. This is subjective knowledge. In the world of knowing, there is lots of subjective knowledge. We know what we know. We feel it in our gut, our bones, in our hearts. No quantifiable analytics in sight. We know what we know. In stories, newspapers, and the spoken word, people all over the world are trying to convince us to think as they do. They're trying every day to convince us that they are right, or we need to think and be more like them. They're bombarding us with facts and figures, opinions, and projections. It is up to each one of us to create order within this chaos, find the patterns that will help us to understand what is true, what could be true, and what is outright false. In order to do all this, we need to have a firm grasp on what is objective and what is subjective. Objective is a statement that is completely unbiased, well, mostly. It is supposed to not be touched by the speaker's previous experiences or tastes. It is verifiable by looking up facts or performing mathematical calculations, rooted in statistics and double and triple blind studies, where the intentions of the scientist does not corrupt the data. Subjective knowledge is a statement that has been colored by a character of the speaker or the writer. It is often has a bias in reality, but reflects the perspective through which speakers view reality. It cannot be verified using concrete figures or facts. perfect place to see this is on the political stage. What is real and tangible, supported by the facts, and what is not? With this question, we as Unitarian Universalists are also required to find value in subjective knowledge based on one's experience. But we do not live on a diet of subjective knowledge alone. There's also another option between these two objective and subjective poles. It is a place where people combine facts with a subjective narrative to make a point. Sometimes, unfortunately, this can be done with ill intentions and to manipulate. Thus, we have to be careful and fact-check to be certain of intentions. More recently, we have been seeing this type of truth-telling more than any other form of communication, a manipulation of the facts. We can see it in advertising, in daily briefings, in the news. We can even see it when people spout verse and chapter of Christian, Muslim, Taoist, Buddhist, Hindu canons, especially when those canons are taken outside of context. If you want to know the whole story, understand the context. People endeavor to persuade others to follow their path. And most of these folks likely believe the spin that they spout. Excuse me. I learned somewhere along the way, many years ago, that knowledge is power. How many people learn that? Right? In Latin, scientia portia est. I believe that this is a basic truth. If there is such a thing as basic truth, one that has rested in the hands of humankind for millennia, knowledge is power, has stood the test of time, per se. There are brokers of knowledge. There is a cost associated in acquiring knowledge. Am I right about that, college graduates? Knowledge is a commodity, and thus who have it tend to be powerful. But those who have knowledge are not necessarily wise. Funny enough, I learned this lesson in business. What I realized watching the management style of some of my peers was that those who held on tightly to the flow of information became corrupted. Many of these high-level managers operated in total secrecy and a lack of transparency, which made their employees anxious and uncertain of their goals and leadership. Yet it gave these managers a sense of power, as they were the gatekeepers, the controllers of information. Beware. Those who suffered from this style of management were both upstream and downstream from the mid-manager. What became evident to me in this style or this type of situation was that the team and the individuals on the team weren't able to truly be functional and profitable while holding only a portion of knowledge. They also felt like they were not a part of the solution, which was pretty frustrating. Those in power and in the know who withheld knowledge tended to be corrupted by what they solely held. Nothing good ever came from this type of behavior. I was encouraged early on to adopt this method of management, and what I encountered seemed counterproductive and frustrating to everyone involved, including me. Holding all the knowledge did not make me feel important or in control. It made me realize that handing out the keys to the kingdom was an important way to empower people and help them to feel a part of the whole. The more knowledge that is shared openly, the more powerful we can be collectively. This experience was not just an understanding for me. It was a new piece of knowledge. It was the beginning of a deeper wisdom about sharing knowledge and the collective power that is held that changed my life. In back rooms and boardrooms, knowledge is a commodity that is traded for currency and favor. Yet when we have access to statistics and knowledge, we can begin to unfold and understand how things truly operate during the light of day. We can see what is good, what is right, and what helps people to feel empowered, engaged, energized, and we can move towards a place of transparency, a place of empowerment. What we will ultimately realize is that knowledge is cheap. Knowledge is cheap, but wisdom is the true alchemical gold that comes from seeing all the angles and cultivating a very personal understanding of what we see and how it affects us and the world in which we operate. It is wisdom that we ultimately need to seek and which will serve us well for the balance of our lives. Another truth is that wisdom comes from the challenges that we face, our successes, as well as our failures. Krista Tippett, a journalist, author, and entrepreneur who created and hosts the public radio program and podcast On Being, explains that, "I have seen that wisdom emerges precisely through those moments when we have to hold seemingly opposing realities in a creative tension and interplay. Power and frailty, birth and death, pain and hope, beauty and brokenness, mystery and conviction, calm and buoyancy, mine and yours." This kind of conversation is like poetry, a tribute to the human capacity to articulate truth at the edges of what words can touch and the limits of words, acknowledging their necessary humility. Humility is a virtue to name and beckon here. It is woven through the lives of wisdom and resilience. It is spiritual. Humility is not about getting small, not about debasing oneself, but about being surprised. This is the humility of a child, which Jesus lauded. It is the humility of the scientist and the mystic. It has a lightness of step, not a heaviness of heart. That lightness is the sure litmus test I know for recognizing wisdom when you see it in the world or feel its stirrings in yourself. The questions that can lead us here are already alive in our midst, waiting to be summoned and made real. Questions are already in our midst. Seek and ye shall find. The curiosity and questions are what inspire us to take that first or maybe that 10,000th step on the journey. Humility, when attaining and holding wisdom, will help us from falling off of the path or falling prey along the way. Humility, that low, sweet root from which all heavenly virtues shoot. There is an important, very personal difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom resides in the center of our being, where the inspiration to quest and seek meaning come from. We rely on wisdom, those murmurings from that still small voice within, the knowledge that we collect as the base metals or herbs that we cook with. Knowledge is that. But it is wisdom that is the spark that, when nurtured, becomes the cooking flame. It is wisdom that is the engine that helps us to distill the essence of life. Ralph Waldo Emerson explained that skill to do comes of doing. Knowledge comes by eyes always open and working hands, and there is no knowledge that is not power. Knowledge is power, but wisdom is beyond import. Wisdom is the precious, most precious of metals. Knowledge is the ingredient. But ultimately, it's not knowledge that we seek. What we seek is the transmutation of knowledge into wisdom, lead into gold, through painstakingly alchemical distillation. Owning and dealing in knowledge is not enough to truly be successful in this life. Knowledge can be corrupted, altered. Knowledge can be tricky. It is the journey through knowledge and the cultivation of wisdom that takes us on a hero's journey away from home, which ultimately, if we are ready, willing, and able, will transform us. Knowledge is something that we can buy. It's something we can sell. It's something we can trade. But to own wisdom, we must plumb the depths of our very being through study, mindfulness, finding snippets, gems, and dusty tones, in conversation with masters who have been on the journey. But even so, there is an alchemy that is required to create the wise soul. Wisdom is not like knowledge because it must be cultivated carefully by each one of us. We could all obtain the same knowledge and not have the wisdom enough to understand its meaning. This is a truth that has been known throughout history, that anything worth its salt, one of our most precious of ingredients, takes time, sweat, and tears. But somewhere along the line, patience for the process was lost. And there was a shift towards the easier and more obvious solution, the acquisition of knowledge for knowledge's sake, instead of transmuting knowledge that led into gold, which took time, expertise, the cultivation of humility and wisdom we embraced, bought and sold the ingredients, the lead, instead of taking time to gain the wisdom. We lost the subtle art of alchemy, the meaning and import of cultivating wisdom. In my opinion, this is what ails our world, what ails our politics, what ails our communities. We are so worried about the ingredients that we do not put in the effort to realize the essence of the wisdom, the burning questions within that we have at our very fingertips. Bailey and Lucy, as you go off to college to acquire knowledge, may you realize that you have a responsibility for what you do with these ingredients. It is within all of us to choose what type of elixir we will create or what type of cake we might bake, using some different metaphors for you. Let us not go by the easiest of routes. Choose the most meaning-filled ones, the hard ones, because that is where the makings of wisdom truly reside. Hang on, I'm doing something I never do. Remember that it's easy enough to contain all the world's knowledge within a phone, right? If we want to know anything, we just turn to the phone. But the elusive wisdom can only be held within you. Okay? Congratulations. I invite us to take a few moments in silent reflection, meditation, and prayer. For this we pray, may it be so. Amen.